Today's guest is a clinical psychologist and women's coach with over 20 years of experience. Throughout her time as a psychologist and coach, she's helped women who work in many different industries, ranging from business and law to medicine and biotech, live the best lives they can live. And she's worked with companies both small and large, even up to the Fortune 500 level. Today, we're going to be going over topics such as how women can maximize their happiness by setting healthy boundaries, how they can communicate assertively to get what they want, and dispelling the myth that self-love and self-care is selfish. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Dana Gianta to the podcast.
Well, I was trained as a psychologist many years ago, and actually I went to business school first, then I switched into psychology. And I grew up in the New York area. I came here about 4.5 years ago, and I wound up specializing with women because most of the women were the ones who were coming to therapy years ago. And so I really worked with many women for the first 10 years. And then men started to show up more into therapy, which was very nice to see. And then coaching, I started doing maybe 10 years into my therapy. So I do life coaching and executive coaching now. And I also work with women in leadership roles or professional women who are really kind of challenged with balancing work and life and learning to set healthy boundaries for themselves. And that's how I came to specialize in boundaries, because in my practice, both the coaching and the therapy, I saw women really struggling a lot with boundaries, feeling guilty about saying no, how to set limits, feeling afraid that they'd risk the relationship if they said no. So that's something I really came to work, you know, specialize in over the years.
That's amazing. And yeah, so for everybody who's watching, that those are the topics we're going to cover. A lot about knowing how to set boundaries, especially healthy boundaries. Professional life as well as personal life. But before that, you went from business to psychology. What is it that really made you want to commit to that switch?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wound up having a friend whose mother was a psychologist. So growing up, I never knew any psychologists. Mm-hmm. But then I bumped into her, and her mother was a psychologist, and we had these great conversations, and I was, you know, started to get really interested. And then I took some classes in college. One was management, and so there was some psychology in that. And then I came across an organizational psychology class, which I really got excited about. It was pretty cool, very interesting. And then even my marketing class had psychology. So that was really a very different angle, kind of consumer psychology. And then I started to volunteer with, children. So girls in high school who were struggling. And I just found like I knew I could be good in business, but I felt like it was really very meaningful to help the younger people. And then and I found it like it would be just more meaningful and enjoyable. So, and it has been.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, it's good that it's been enjoyable. I think that makes the work a lot easier. And it also lets you be a better psychologist. I feel like anytime you enjoy what you do, you kind of do a better job at it. When was the first time you attended therapy or like visited a psychologist yourself?
Yeah, that's a let me see. Probably, I think when my father got diagnosed with cancer. Yeah, it was in my PhD program, and it was pretty sudden. He wound up getting diagnosed, and he died like 3 weeks later. So it was a pretty traumatic kind of, you know, experience. And so then I sought out a grief therapist who was extremely helpful at the time. That's, yeah, awesome. Because it was really challenging. So, yeah, so that was great. That's when I, you know, and I really do believe like there's so much benefit of being on the receiving end of therapy, like really experiencing it. And I thought I couldn't be a good therapist. I didn't think I could be a good therapist if I didn't also experience the,
right.
Yeah, myself. But that was incredibly helpful. And then also when my mother got sick a few years later, I also went. So
what do you think causes people to have that stigma about therapy? Because I feel like a lot of people have a little bit of apprehension and a little bit of doubt about sitting down with someone and, you know, opening up and, you know, letting somebody else explore their brain. What do you think leads to that?
Sure. I think a lot of it is the society that we live in. Unfortunately, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of judgment going back, you know, decades about people that, if you go to therapy, you must have a mental illness. You must have, you know, some kind of mental health issue, which many do. But there's still a judgment about that, you know, you're somehow less than if you have a mental health issue versus, you know, we have physical health issues all the time, right? Why is having a physical health issue okay and acceptable, and having a mental health condition not, right? So I think a lot of, you know, we unfortunately absorb a lot of this societal judgment. And then sometimes our families, where we grow, I mean, our families, some families are very accepting of therapists and, you know, psychology, and others feel like, you know, you're you've had the names that we get called, right? Shrink and quack and, you know, head shrinker, whatever, all these different things. And so if they grow up in a family where, you know, they don't believe in it, or they look down upon it, it's really hard. You know, if you're a child in that family, or you're a young adult and you want to go to therapy to kind of go against what your parents think, or your siblings, or your, especially sometimes even the extended family can even be worse, right?
They can, yeah, absolutely,
you know, make fun of you and make comments. And so, yeah, it's sometimes people feel like they have to go into the closet for therapy, right?
Yeah, definitely.
What's one thing you think you look for when you're interviewing someone to be a client of yours?
I think I really look for someone who's motivated, who really wants to make a change in their life, and who's open to different ideas and possibilities. You know, I think that openness and that willingness, that they really have to at least want to be really interested in making a change and commit to it, because it doesn't happen overnight. Yeah. But if you come, you know, but again, there could be some significant changes happening within, you know, within several weeks, you know, 5 to 7 sessions, you could really see a difference, even more. Sometimes it could be the first session. But I think that openness, the motivation, and the willingness to kind of invest in themselves, you know, because it's not just like I really feel it's a kind of a sacred hour, you know, it's a sacred experience. And if they're willing to do that, yeah, I'd love to work with them, yeah.
How quick do you think you can screen someone based on whether they're filler questions or based on their attitude, that you decide, hey, this guy's not willing to open up, or this guy's just so closed off, he would not make a good client?
Well, a good question I often ask is, you know, have you been in either therapy or coaching, you know, previously? Have you been to therapy before? If they haven't been to therapy, I'll ask, have you been to coach, you know, in coaching? So, or what kind of, I'll seek out kind of what kind of personal growth have they been open to? And so if they really have some like history of personal growth and, you know, being open to, whether it's, you know, even a mentor of some sort, that's a positive sign, you know. But pretty quickly, you know, based on some of the questions I'll ask and just their, you know, things they may ask me, or if I ask even their motivation, you know, why, what have they tried and why are they seeking me now? So what has shifted in their life to kind of have them be ready for therapy now versus 6 months ago or a year ago. And usually you can kind of assess how motivated and interested they really are, versus like if they're saying their relative wants them to go, right? Or their boyfriend or their partner, that's, you know, they're less personally motivated, right? And so that's something you look for too. Yeah.
And how difficult is it to flip that switch off? Because sometimes, you know, we've been podcasting for a little while, and sometimes I get carried away when talking to people. And then I snap out of it. I'm like, oh, I don't know, really know if they want me to ask all these questions. Maybe they just wanted like a, you know, some small talk. But I kind of like, you know, push them and talk a little more. And then I'm like, okay, let me just relax a little bit. After you've talked to enough people, let's say you're just, you know, out in public at a grocery store or something, and a conversation pops up, is it difficult to sort of flip the psychology brain off and just kind of be like a regular civilian, like one of us, or you know, or is it not?
Yeah, that's a neat question. I think I'll always, you know, subconsciously, you just get trained and to be very, I'm very just naturally curious, but you get trained to really observe people's behavior very closely. So I just naturally, I'll observe the behaviors that just happens naturally. I don't even think about it. But in terms of like analyzing, or really like, you know, when I'm talking to them, no, I can shut that off, because I like to take a break. I need a mental break myself. So yeah, I try not to, when I'm out, once I'm done, I'm, you know, out to have relax, enjoy myself, have fun, you know, yeah, take some rest.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because out of all three of us, I think only Noah's been to therapy, right?
Yeah, so.
Oh, nice.
Nah, I can speak on my experience. I've spoken on it before, like in a previous podcast, but I started therapy when I turned 26, and I was like, because I finally had the money to afford it, you know. But the thing that I kind of struggled with, like, in the beginning was, like, I was open to doing it, but I was really overwhelmed with, like, finding a local therapist. So in the Valley, like, do you have any commentary on that? Like, why is it just like that? Why is it so hard to find, like, a mental health specialist in, obviously, Vegas, but, like, I'm assuming the rest of the country?
Right, right. You know, it's varied over the years. I think during the pandemic and after, it's become more challenging. I think more people have sought out therapy. So there's you know, a good number of therapists, but some of them are they don't take insurance, and for very good reasons, you know. But I think there's some really good directories, like Psychology Today is a great directory for people who are looking for therapy. And they have, you know, there's psychologists on there, but MFTs, all different, you know, types of professional social workers. So you can find, I think that's a great resource. And I think there's also, there's a few. Therapy, I think therapy.com is another one. And then on the East Coast, they also have, I think it's called zen.com. But Psychology Today is probably a great start. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, I might have went on that website, but just it was like a few years ago. And like, thankfully, I ended up on BetterHelp, but like, I stumbled upon like a really great therapist, whatever. And I just remember like those first few sessions weren't tough per se, but having to kind of explain your whole life to somebody you've never met before, especially like the deep, intricate details about it, I think is really like overwhelming, you know?
Right.
But, sure. After a while, like, you know, you just kind of get used to it. Like, it almost becomes like a routine, right?
Yeah.
Or like, at least for me, is like, we would talk at least, I think the schedule would like change every once in a while, but it'd be like an hour a week, you know? So like with your clients, how many times are you speaking to clients usually?
Yeah, I would say mostly it's once a week, usually, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, depending, you know. Sometimes it can be if they're going through a specifically hard moment in their life, you know, some transition or, you know, some maybe a loss in the family, we may bump it up to twice a week, but typically once a week, yeah.
Gotcha. That's good. And something that I never really expressed this to my therapist, but like something I felt like, I shouldn't have felt guilty, but like I was feeling like, well, my life on paper isn't really that crazy. Like, I don't have any, like, extreme trauma at the moment. You know what I mean? So, like, every session she'd be like, oh, what you been up to this week? I worked. That's it? Yeah. I mean, so, like, I almost felt bad for, like, not giving her enough drama or whatever to, you know, kind of get through our sessions or whatever. But think, you know what, like...
Did her a favor.
No. Yeah. No, thankfully. Yeah. But I think... when I look back at my time at therapy, because I'm not in it currently, I'd love to go back, obviously, but what's it called? I just had to go find a therapist again, and it's a whole thing of where I stopped. But Like, do you know, like, how long does it take you to kind of notice, like, a change in your clients? Because, like, for me, when I was going through therapy, you know, I knew that my life was changing, or rather my approach to life was changing, but it didn't feel like a change, you know?
Mm. So it felt very like subtle.
Right. Yeah. Subtle. Like that. It was like a subtle, it wasn't like this like big thing. So, you know, my therapist had kind of laid out to me, like one of the things I struggled with, you know, coming from my childhood was codependency.
Mm.
So I know if I remember this correctly, there's like levels to codependency.
Sure.
And I was like, I was like very high, like codependent and very high on the codependent scale. And like one of the things we wanted to work on was just kind of like being able to like kind of wind it back a little bit. So obviously some of the expertise you have was like being able to set boundaries and whatnot. And I think I'm better at it now than I was before. I still struggle with it, but it's very relatable. You know, in my personal life, at work, like nobody really teaches you that stuff. You just kind of go trial by fire. So
it's totally true. Yeah. You're right. Nobody teaches it.
Yeah.
And it really takes courage to go to therapy. You know, I mean, really any, whether it's even coaching, right? Because you're sharing a lot about your life and your past. And so it's not easy. You don't know this person, right? They're a complete stranger. And So it really does. It takes, I think, a lot of courage to go to therapy. And I think that's why a lot of people may hesitate, right? And, you know, there's all the other part of the stigma is that you should be able to do it yourself. You know, you shouldn't need to seek help, right? It's kind of, we have the, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps mentality, right? In the U.S. especially. And so you feel kind of, I mean, even I did when I first started, you know, which sounds crazy, really, but even, you know, knowing what I know about psychology, you still feel like there's kind of like a weakness in having to, you know, go to a therapist and, you know, seeking somebody out. But it's just the way we've been taught to think about it, right? It's actually a strength. It really takes, it takes courage, and it's really a strength to kind of seek out and, you know, talk to somebody. You know, it's good that you didn't have too much drama there, because in your, you know, at the time, you know, you don't need to have something major going on to benefit from therapy, right? Yeah. It can just be you want to shift your perspective and learn a new way of thinking, or you want to kind of broaden the possibilities that you see for your life and feel like you can dream more, right? And feel more excited about your life. Those are some great reasons to go.
Yeah. So that was kind of, oh, did you have a question?
Oh, no, it's going
to, oh, okay.
I don't know if I answer your question, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, kind of the reason why I started going at the time was just like, I just had like a bunch of questions I just needed answers to from like a, not impractical. What's the word I'm looking for?
Objective.
Yeah, like an objective person. Yeah, like I could tell somebody this stuff and then be like, okay, this is how you might want to look at this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And that's I feel good. Like a lot of people don't have that, because sometimes you can say like, go to a friend or go to a family member, but they might have some kind of bias in terms of, you know, deciding whether, you know, you're handling the situation correctly or not. But when you tell it to someone who's unfamiliar with it all, they can kind of give you that objective viewpoint and tell you, okay, maybe you should have done this instead. Did you think about this? And so on and so forth. Would you say?
Yeah. I think those are great points. It is. It's one of the few places you really can go where you can receive an objective viewpoint, right? Because family and friends, they're very well-meaning, right? They really love you and they care about you, but they often have their own ideas as to what they think is the best for your life, right? And whether you like it or not, or really, you know, and they mean well, but it could be completely different than what your dreams are, what your heart is saying, right? What you really want to do or who you want to be. Sometimes they're just not able to recognize that, right? Or to support it. So going to somebody else who's really can be objective and really wants and truly really like partners with you, they want you to be happy and they want you to kind of follow your heart and do the things that really light you up, you know? So it's one of the, kind of unique advantages of that.
Yeah. And if I think about the timing, like I started when I was 26, when did I meet you guys?
In the last year.
Was it last year?
Last summer, yeah.
No, it was longer than that, right?
2023?
It was already 2023?
No, I thought it was last year's summer, no? Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, right, but my point is, though, is that, like, me and my therapist had talked a lot about, like, you know, kind of my goals in life. And, like, one of my goals, obviously, is, like, doing stuff like this or putting myself out there, you know.
She actually hit us up. That's how we met you. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I was about to. I was like, I got big eyed. I was like, what? My therapist talked to you? No, but kind of how you were just speaking about, like, you know, trying to explain, like, what you do to people that know you. Because sometimes, like, it doesn't always work out. Like, I don't, like, people know I'm on a podcast, but, like, I don't think, like, my mom knows. I don't think my dad knows. Because if I try to explain it, they just, me growing up, I would always, like, because I'm a very creative person, but like, you know, that kind of was just kind of like, nah, don't do that. Go, you know, go study, go be a lawyer, a doctor or something. I'm like, nah, I'm going to do this, you know.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome that you were, you know, you're true to yourself, right? Despite, you know, of course, your parents are well-intentioned, right? They love you and it feels like, yeah, they're good advice, right? But you were really listening to yourself and your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
pivoting into boundaries, though, for women in particular, what are the biggest things to keep in mind for setting healthy boundaries?
You know, there's three feelings I identified over the years for women, and it applies to men too, but especially they're cues. So when you're feeling, when you experience these feelings, they're cues for you to pause and ask yourself, does this situation with this person warrant a boundary? Could it benefit from a boundary? So one is if you start to feel resentful or anger, but especially resentment, that's a good sign that you're something's happening in the relationship. You know, you feel you're maybe feeling taken advantage of. There feels like there's some imbalance. It's not reciprocal. So that when you may really want to step back and after you notice that, and if it happens one time, you know, that's okay. But if it happens two or three times, like a pattern, that's when you want to step back and say, okay, what is happening in this situation? And could this benefit from me setting a boundary here? Right. So one is resentment. Another one is guilt. So if I'm feeling, you know, more than one occasion, several times with this person, I walk away feeling guilty about something, it could be a sign that there's some dynamic happening that is making you feel less than. Whether they're intentionally manipulating you or unintentionally, or they just have, maybe they have a way of communicating that they target your person rather than the behavior, so you feel less than, but there's something that's making you feel guilty. That's a good, again, it's a sign that you may want to set a boundary here. And the other one is feeling anxious, discomfort. So if, let's say, you meet somebody for the first time and let's say they don't have very good boundaries, right? Like physical space, and they're in your physical space, right? And they're making you uncomfortable and you try to back up and then they come forward or whatever it could be. But paying attention to situations that bring up discomfort for you, that's a very good sign that, okay, something about this I don't want. I want to put some space or distance. It's a good opportunity to set a boundary there too.
Go ahead.
What would you say to women who are experiencing like one of those three, or in particular, at least the discomfort, especially in the workplace environment where perhaps the woman is in a position where the harasser in this situation may be a position above her?
Right.
Or a position of power, per se.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really, I think, a valuable question about it. You know, people in power, how do you set boundaries with someone in power, right? Whether it's your boss or your somebody, another superior. And I would recommend in that case, you know, yeah, either find someone in the office that you can trust, right? Especially someone you can trust. And if you have a therapist or a coach, I'd say first speak with them about the situation, right? You know, brainstorm, problem solve, different options. If you don't get one, no, I'm like, possibly, but look for a mentor in the office, somebody you trust, preferably a woman who may be older than you, has a little bit more like work experience, life experience, maybe experienced some kind of similar situation in that office or another, and explore different ways to potentially address the situation. And see if you know, depending on how serious it is, right? So sometimes these could be like minor issues you may want to set a boundary with, but sometimes it can be, you know, it could be like sexual harassment. It can be quite serious. And then you really want to, you want to bring together, I think, a number of people who can really hear your situation, and like a trusted like circle of women that you know, friends, or it can be men too. But people you trust who can then kind of help you brainstorm and think of possibilities how to address it. I've unfortunately heard that sometimes HR, talking to HR, you know, departments may or may not be very helpful. So that's something you'd have to really carefully assess in your workplace, right? How valuable they could be. But I think somebody, you know, if you could find a woman at the same level as the person who may be doing that, to kind of speak to them and get their feedback.
Yeah, which one of those do you think is more common out of the resentment, the guilt, or the anxiety? Or are they all kind of pretty equal?
Yeah, they're all very, very common. I think very experienced quite a bit by many women. And many times there's, you know, they experience not just one, but at least two of them, you know, sometimes all of them. So, yeah, I would say all of them. Maybe discomfort may be the most, because we can find ourselves, there's so many situations that could bring that up, right? Yes. So probably that would be what you may experience the most, but then, yeah, guilt and resentment too.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because I feel like resentment is one of the, it's a sort of more difficult to diagnose, or sometimes you don't notice it as often as you would notice discomfort or guilt. And at least for me personally, sometimes I've felt that sometimes I didn't know I was resentful, and then I look back at a situation or a relationship I have with somebody, and then I notice that I have certain behaviors, or, you know, sometimes I'm not really acting as I would if I was talking to somebody else. And it ends up being that sort of resentment that stays inside, but you don't really address it, or you don't notice it right away. Mm. Would you say that's pretty common?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really, good observation. Yeah, I think it is. I think, it's something that's also like anger and resentment. They're not emotions that are really as acceptable as other, as being like uncomfortable or anxious or guilty or sad. Feeling resentful, people kind of, you know, look at you a certain way if you mention you're resentful about something or you're showing anger. So I think we have kind of like subconsciously, we just kind of disconnect from it when we feel it, or we feel like we shouldn't feel like resentful towards somebody or something, right? It's not like a good emotion. So yeah, we kind of push it down, or we just kind of, subconsciously, not pay attention to it. And we don't even realize we have it until something else, maybe it gets stronger, right?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Or we sometimes will just have an outburst, right? We get so irritated. We're finally like up to here with it. We finally like blow up, right? Yeah,
definitely.
That's how I deal with stuff, yeah.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah. I need to work on that. I'm trying, but yeah.
Right. Well, that's what, going back to the boundaries, and that the reason why that happens is because there's three styles of communication. One is passive, another one's assertive, and the other one's aggressive. And if we don't learn these different ways of communicating, we kind of become passive aggressive. We don't really know how to confront a situation or set a boundary. So there's these things that really make us upset or uncomfortable keep happening. And we keep not saying anything because we don't really know how to say it, right? To set the boundary. So then We take it, and we push it down, we try to ignore it, right? We whatever, make excuses for it. And finally, like the 10th time it's happened, we can't take it anymore, and we just explode. And that's the aggressive part. Then it becomes from passive to aggressive, because we just can't take it anymore, right? We just don't know what else to do, and we explode. And that's like a very forceful way of pushing somebody back, right? Yeah. And setting the boundary.
But what I kind of find interesting is like, setting boundaries at work is so much more different.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Setting boundaries at home or whatever, right? Because at work, you can't curse, can't use any bad language, and I think I guess we've all had to set boundaries at work, but for, anyone watching, like, how can you do that in a way that, like, when you pull back from that situation, you're like, okay, I set a boundary and it's working, right? Because a lot of times I feel like, especially in the corporate America workplace, it's like it's all this passive speak and, I'm really here to help, but not really. Like, it's so much like behind a conversation.
Yeah, or even like certain groups of friends or family, I find the same thing. Like, sometimes I'm very comfortable setting a boundary and I'm like, yeah, this is what I normally am. And then other times I'm like, it's a little bit more difficult to kind of have that courage to set a boundary. What do you think that is? What do you think that stems from?
Yeah, sure. Well, it does. It really depends on who you're setting a boundary with. So, if you're very comfortable with somebody, if you've known them a long time, if you're really good friends or a family member, depending, it could be easier to set the boundary with them. If, however, they happen to have, let's say, they don't do well when you set boundaries, maybe they pout, maybe they get angry, maybe they, threaten to kind of like, end the relationship, depending or how they react to it, it can make it then much more difficult for you to set a boundary, because then you're afraid, right? You start to become afraid of the reaction that you may get, right? Or maybe they make you feel guilty, like, why are you setting this boundary with me? You don't really love me or care about me, right? So then now you're really uncomfortable and don't really know how to set that boundary, right? So part of it is, we kind of respond or kind of feed off of the reaction of the person we're trying to set a boundary with. But that goes to, as we become stronger in ourselves and develop, a strong relationship with ourselves, we're better at not feeling, absorbing that reaction, right? We're better able to center ourselves in a way that we don't react to that person's reaction, right? We can stay centered. We know, well, they could feel disappointed if we set a boundary. They can get angry if we set a boundary, right? They could try to make us feel guilty. But we're still going to go ahead and set the boundary because that's honoring ourselves and that's what we need to do, right? But we can't control the other person's reaction, but that's, we can let them have it, but we don't have to feel bad about that, right? Because we're honoring our feelings and our needs, and that's what we need to do. And in the end, that will make the relationship even better because then they'll know where we stand and we're not overgiving. We're not going to feel resentful towards them, right? Because we're honoring that limit that we have. And the relationship will become healthier and more reciprocal.
But so, something I wanted to ask you too, sure. For me, at least in my personal experience, like this is something that I feel like I've been really working on like these last few years of my life, just with like work and everything, you know, and whatnot. Yeah. And to me, it's new to me to set boundaries because I never had to do it before. I was always, and I'm still guilty of it too, but like I always check up on everybody else. I always, oh, do you need anything? You know, whereas I don't think that same, I don't want to say love, but like that same feeling is not really reciprocated towards myself. So like, I mean, when is like the right time to like start? Like, does this come from like childhood or like your teens, like when to start setting boundaries? Cause like, I feel like that skill, like if you don't learn it early before you don't really have any responsibilities, it's gonna.
It's way harder to learn.
Exactly. Than
yeah.
When you're 4 years old.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, somebody just gave me an example, and this was really amazing. It was a little five-year-old, and kids are so perceptive, and they're so honest, right? Because they don't have any filters, right? So they'll just say whatever. And you know, they were going to have a new baby was going to come into the family. And the little girl, I guess, from previously had taken care of a lot of, you know, children, or, you know, she was a big sister to another, you know, younger sibling or something. Maybe a step family. Anyway, she was very clear. She said, I am not taking care of the new baby. I am not doing that. I'm going to play with my dolls. I'm going to do what I need to, but you'll have to find somebody else. And told the parents that she'll be happy with the new baby arriving as long as she's not the caregiver, practically, taking care of her. And I was amazed. I was amazed at how well she set that boundary. And the parents were shocked, but totally respected it and said, yes, that's not your responsibility. You know, you're not the mother. You can have, you know, you get to play and have fun. And so it can happen at a very young age. But most of the time we're not taught it anywhere. We don't learn it. We usually don't learn it at home. We definitely don't learn it in school, you know, pretty rarely. And we don't learn in the workplace. So I think, you know, we're getting more educated about boundaries now. I would say mostly over the past 10 years, you've started to see more books on it and articles about it. When I started doing it like 20 years ago, there was nothing, like there was hardly anything out there. So it's really come a long way. And I think, you know, it's on us to kind of educate ourselves, read, learn, you know, go to talk to a therapist, a coach, really, because I really think it's one of the most invaluable skills we can have is to learn to set like healthy boundaries. And then you can share it with others. You can share it with your young, you know, your young siblings, your friends. Let them, you know, that you're modeling the boundaries so they get to see how you're doing it. They learn from you. So we can spread that and really build it into the community, right? And you build it into your families. But the earlier, the better. I think if you can learn to set boundaries when you're, you know, 4 or 5 or 6, I think it's invaluable. Yeah, because then you get your needs met in the family too, right? You get to honor your feelings, get respected, your needs get met more. So it's really great.
Gosh, I should have met you in 1999. That would have, my life would have been so much different.
Just <That's hysterical.
laughs> And us as men, how can we do a better job of helping the women in our lives, whether that be our moms, our sisters, wives, etc., be able to set those boundaries with us?
Yeah, I love that question. I think one of the greatest gifts you can give is to really listen, you know, with genuine curiosity to your mother, you know, whoever that woman is in your life, and really do your best to honor that boundary that they're setting. You know, you can ask them, you know, what does this mean for you? You know, how can I help you with this? Is there a reason, you know, you seem like you really need this boundary at this time? What may be contributing to that? And really do your best to respect it, you know, and to respond to the request in a gentle, kind way, rather than with anger or, you know, resentment or guilt or another emotion that could feel unsafe for the woman in your life that you really love and care about. I think safety is huge for women, and it often doesn't get discussed, really. And a lot of women feel unsafe, you know, in their lives, in this society. But most importantly, they want to feel safe with their partner, you know, safe at home, safe with their family, especially a husband or a partner. And how we respond to them and how we interact with them can really either add to their sense of safety or really take away from it, you know?
And speaking of safety, too, that's something that, you know, I think as all of us as men in the, oh, besides yourself, but as men, we don't appreciate, like, just how oblivious we are, right? Like, I was talking to my sister one time, like, I think, like, I forget, like, she would be like, oh, you know, what's it called, like, if it's like 11, 12 at night, like I try to like park next to like a, you know, a
street light
or, you know what I'm saying? Something like that. I'm like, gosh, I never even,
thought of that.
Just, you go out in the middle of the night, who gives a shit? Like, yeah. I don't, whatever. And I didn't realize that as a man, you know, I had to sit with myself and go, oh my gosh, like, wow, I really like, I took that for granted.
Right.
So is there like, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a list of things that men take oblivious being men, but like what in your practice though, like what are those things that like we don't appreciate, you know, as men, like that we've kind of find oblivious that women have to deal with though?
You mean in terms of safety or in general?
Or in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of women feel that there's still quite a bit of an imbalance in terms of the expectations that they have on them versus men that men have, you know, not that men don't have a lot of, you know, responsibilities too, but I think still, you know, even in this day and age, the onus is still on women to kind of, you know, work full time or, you know, work as much as they can and do a lot more in the house and with the children. And it's definitely gotten better, which is wonderful, you know, but I think still there's still the expectation and the societal kind of conditioning that even if you look at the commercials still, you look at the, you know, the magazine articles and it's still the woman, you know, with the mothers, with the children and mothers kind of needing to be, you know, do both, right? Take care of still cleaning the house. And it's gotten better, but I think so, you know, if men could be really check in with their partners and ask them like how are you feeling about the like how we're distributing the responsibilities, you know, that would go I think a long way. And with the child care that, you know, it's you're not like a lot of, you know, sometimes men will act like they're babysitters rather than their, you know, like fathers. I'm not saying some of them feel like it's the mother's like it's the wife's responsibility, and they feel like they'll help out,
yeah,
which is interesting, but not always, right? I mean, a lot of men really love being dads and they're really, you know, doing a lot of response, you know, taking a lot of, you know, great care with their children. So I think it really depends. But yeah, I think a lot of, you know, and women, they may not share like a lot of the, you know, what makes them feel unsafe in their life. You know, a lot of the challenges, whether it's in the workplace, they feel unsafe because, you know, I mean, sometimes it's just the environment, right? The environment may not be safe. Maybe there's like asbestos in the buildings, or, you know, it's maybe there's a coworker that doesn't seem, you know, the way he treats her or talks to her. So, you know, depending on whether or not she shares that with her partner. Yeah, those are just some of the things. But
kind of winding back to like you're talking about like the societal impressions per se, like why do you think, like I guess in America, like why is it just so unrealistic to like the way we work, right? Like we, you know, our work day is from like, you know, on paper 9 to 5, but it's really from like what, 6 to 8
basically,
you know? So you have your whole day is basically at work, and then you have to get home and try to live a semblance of a home life, you know?
Right.
So do a lot of your clients kind of struggle with that?
Yeah. No, that's a big issue. It's really, you know, the expectations at work to kind of, you know, to work 10 to 12 hour days at times is really, you know, it's extraordinarily demanding, right? It taxes like every part of, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally. It is. And I think that's why you see a lot of women leaving the workforce in droves, right? A lot of them are, they're leaving leadership positions because they're expected to work 60 to 80 hours a week. They don't get to see their children, right? And then they feel like they have to, you know, work twice as, or, you know, really show up and even perform, you know, twice as better or twice as good as their male counterparts, right? So you just kind of just get the recognition. So it's not worth it. You know, many feel like it's just not worth it. And yeah, it is. It's very hard. You know, they talk about burnout and, you know, why are so many people getting burned out? Because it's not and they make it seem like it's the woman's or the man's, you know, somehow there's a weakness, right? They're not doing enough to kind of be resilient, right? Or to prioritize their well-being. But I don't care who you put. If you put somebody in an environment that's just completely overwhelming and so demanding, over time, that person is going to get burnt out. It's just a matter of time. I don't care if they can be Superman, you know, it's impossible. It's not a healthy environment. So the organism in this environment, right, the human being, they're going to break down because we're not meant to work constantly without periods of renewal and breaks and regular self-care, right? And so the workplace often doesn't allow that. They think, you know, self-care and renewal is supposed to happen either before you go to work,
yeah,
or when you get back. Right. And that's not realistic. That's not how we're made. And so they're kind of, you know, kind of colluding and acting like, you know, it's the individual's fault or responsibility, but it's not. It's a systemic issue that has been going on for, you know, especially the past couple of decades, but it's gotten a lot worse. And they're just really, unfortunately, a lot of employees are being taken advantage of.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and yeah. I think the male side has been talked about a lot more recently. I think that we have had more spokespeople out there speaking about men's mental health, the issues that men face. But I think the fact that a lot of women don't prioritize their own happiness, like you were mentioning, they're almost forced to choose between either, you know, climbing the corporate ladder, having a successful career, or being a mother. And whichever one they choose, they're almost shamed by somebody or someone for whichever one they choose. Why do you think that is? And what do you think women can do to sort of cope with that, the fact that they're pressured to kind of never choose the thing that they're happy choosing?
Sure. Yeah, I think these are great questions. Yeah, it's very difficult for, you know, I mean, it's difficult for men as well. I think it's especially difficult for women because I think men don't critique each other as much as women do. I think men are kinder to each other and maybe a bit more supportive, but women can, like you said, you know, unfortunately they can, and I'm not sure why. I think maybe because the cultural conditioning of like, women are kind of taught to just conditioned to compare themselves, right? Especially with social media and all the magazines and, you know, constantly compare each other. And so there can be, even if, you know, a woman may love being a mother, but she also wants to be, you know, a CEO or have a leadership position in a company. Well, sometimes the women who maybe don't have that same ambition may make them feel insecure and uncomfortable. So they may then criticize that woman who's in a leadership position or who has the ambition and wants to go. So I think sometimes, you know, you'll have women who well-intentioned, but they may have because of their own insecurities and maybe low self-esteem or challenges with that, they can say things and act in ways that are hurtful to other women who maybe, you know, want to be full-time mothers, but then they're not respected for that, right? Or they want to be, they're ambitious, and then that's considered too much, and then they don't care for their, then they perceive like, well, you don't really love your children as much, right? If you're so career-oriented, right? So there's a lot of unnecessary judgment that I think happens from women to other women, and a lot of it stems from insecurity. Women not being happy with themselves, not having high self-esteem leads them to do and act and, you know, say and act in ways that are unfortunately hurtful.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate because I feel like it's definitely not highlighted enough. And like you said, I would agree, like between men, we're a lot more understanding deep down. I feel like on the surface, we kind of rag on each other a little bit, you know, we joke around. But deep down, we kind of have that like, okay, but he's really going through this. Like, we're going to help each other out kind of thing. Would you guys agree?
Yeah. I get what both of you are saying. I think men, like, we don't really have those like sit down, like deep conversations. They only come every once in a blue moon. Mm. Whereas I think for women, it's just a lot easier to have a conversation speaking about a delicate topic.
Right.
You know, whereas I think men, unless Like if I see someone that I'm close to, like if they're really like, you know, I've had, you know, male friends of mine, you know, cry in front of me, and I've done the same in front of them. But nice. You know, to be in that space, like especially for men, like to get, let our guard down and be able to do that, that's like, well, shit, to admit it on a fucking podcast right now, like that lets you know huge. Just how much like my mental state has grown in like the last few years, because maybe at 25, 26, I don't think I would have been comfortable enough to admit that.
Right, you know, right. But
at 29 right now, I'm
that's
just
impressive.
Like...
impressive. It takes courage.
I'm an open book. So, you know, I think for a lot of us, though, like, and especially just, you know, both men and women, like, you know, America is just such like a, you know, such a meat grinder, right? Because we're expected to be, you know, in shape, amazing at work, you know,
all amazing
of
our at home.
Yeah, amazing at home. All our relationships are great. You know, all our friends, we get to keep up with our friends. And
financial's good.
Yeah, money's great. Yeah, I'm just like, I can't keep up with any of this crap. So, you know, for your clients, how do you kind of reassure them to be like, you look, on paper or, you know, life might be a headache right now, but you have a lot to be thankful for.
Right. Sure. Well, you're right. There is so much pressure. I mean, we're under like a tremendous amount of pressure. I think more so than our parents and the previous generations, you know, with everything going on and with, you know, because of the internet and social media and all the, we see so much more, right? We're exposed to so much more. And I had to learn it myself too, because, you know, there's, because of all this pressure to do it all excellently or be perfect at all of it, right? And, you know, it's really, and that's what, it's, we'll get to my, you know, the book that I wrote.
Absolutely.
But it came to really recognizing that developing that self-love and self-acceptance is so critical. It's so important, because without that, then you're constantly striving to be better, to be like your neighbor, or to do as well as your coworker, or to achieve whatever X amount of dollars you feel like, whatever that status symbol is, to kind of reach that, so you feel like you're good enough, right? And all of these actions that we take and what we're striving for is so much because we want to feel like we're fundamentally that we're good enough. And oftentimes we can do those things, but it's not the thing that really is going to fill us up, right? It's really coming to, as you shared, like accepting yourself, right? That love and that acceptance for ourselves and all of our unique, you know, foibles and idiosyncrasies that we have, and just embracing like who we are, and coming to just feeling comfortable in our skin with who we are. That leads to self-love and confidence and acceptance. And then these other things, we don't need to, you know, like you said, we don't need to check off all the boxes and be excellent at everything, because we're okay if we're like a B, and, you know, maybe we're a B at work, but we like an A doing, and we have passions outside of work that we're good at and we excel at, right? And maybe we're an okay, you know, we're a pretty good partner, but we're an amazing dad, right? Or we're an amazing partner and son, but we struggle sometimes with the child, the age the children are at. We don't feel like we could relate as well right now, right? So just to kind of embrace our imperfection, right? Our humanness, really.
That was really insightful. I really like that. Like, you know, you can kind of look at life like almost like a report card. Like, you know, this is an A, this is a B, this is, you know. You should strive for straight A's, but nice. If you don't get them, it's okay. It's realistic.
Yeah, I think also like knowing how things are weighted. Like, I've sometimes felt like when I do feel that way, like I'm stuck in a hamster wheel and I'm kind of just like chasing the carrot dangling in front of me, I sort of like sit back and look at things in perspective and understand that if I had a choice between having one or the other, I would say, yeah, I can sacrifice this and I would only choose this. Therefore, because I'm okay at this, then I can't really complain, because it's better than something that I would be okay with otherwise. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's I think I don't know if you've ever heard of this analogy. It's like the was it the rubber ball, glass ball thing? Like the glass balls, if they bounce, if you let them go, they're gonna crack. And that's like the important things: your family, you know, your wife, you know, your house, et cetera, you know. But the rubber balls are the things you can bounce and like you can kind of let go. You don't have to worry about as much. Like, oh, I don't know, let me think.
Right.
Go and watch a movie or something like, you know, just less consequential stuff. So,
right,
you know,
right.
For people out there, they're like,
That's important. Both of what you're talking about is getting clear about your priorities. Like, what are your values, right? What do you really value in your life? What are your priorities? And I think it's a great question for everybody to ask would be, you know, for you, right, for each one of us, what does success mean? What does success mean for each one of us? Because what success means for me to have a successful, rich life or meaningful life is going to be very different, right, than what for you and for you and for you. And the more we can get clear for ourselves, right, without comparing ourselves to what our families will think is a successful life, right, or our friends think is, but really owning and, you know, acknowledging what would that mean for us, like a really meaningful, rich life, right? That's huge, because then it'll guide our choices and our decisions, right? Where do we want to invest our time and energy? If this is really what we feel is so meaningful for our lives and really will enrich our lives, this is what we want to focus on. And everything else is a distraction.
And something I wanted to kind of latch onto that point you just made, does that change throughout the years? That should be like moving, like, mm-hmm. Right.
Right, moving, should be moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, oftentimes it is, I would say, you know, especially if we keep growing. Mm-hmm. Not everybody keeps growing, right? But hopefully if you keep growing, that's going to change your priorities, what's really, you know, what feels enriching and meaningful for you. Yeah.
I had to ask, because I'm like, success at 20, it was a Ferrari, and I'm like,
I feel like your definition of success becomes more refined. I feel like you kind of start to, it's like you have a big tree stump and you kind of whittle it down over the years into like kind of what it really means to be successful. But what are some of the tips that you would have for people like us, right? Where we kind of have to be on social media a lot, and sometimes it's kind of hard for people, and it's easy to get lost in that social media life. And when everybody's posting their highlights, constantly comparing yourself to that, or constantly reacting to news, constantly reacting to trending topics, what are some tips you would have to sort of limit that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I think it's set boundaries. We can set, you know, technology boundaries with ourselves, you know, with all our gadgets and devices, and give yourself, meaning giving yourself breaks, right? So like really, you know, tuning into yourself and noticing, okay, maybe, you know, two or three times a day, I'm going to cut myself off, take a break from the technology, the social media, and do something else, right? Go and talk to a friend, go and do you read something, right? Or go take a walk in nature, or do some things, anything that renews you, that feels uplifting, that feels positive, and that gives yourself like a mental break, right? Because, and that doesn't, and so you don't have to be, there's no comparison, right? You're not looking, hearing the news, especially now, right? The news can be very distressing and absolutely disturbing. Yeah. So, I mean, I encourage clients right now not to watch it much if you can help it, especially if you react to it, right? If it really upsets you or makes you feel down or fearful, then really, you know, set a good boundary and really restrict yourself from that, you know? But especially social media. I mean, I think there's really good research showing that people, the more social media they watch and absorb, the lower their self-esteem and their mood. It affects they have a higher incidence of depression and anxiety, especially for like adolescents, right? So especially for them, they're at higher risk. I think they should really limit it as much as they can. But, you know, you guys, you know, hopefully you got more resilience there. But I would say, you know, tune into yourself and notice, you know, even try to kind of limit it and do what's essential. But and then whatever it really is essential, and then the rest of it, try, you know, really limit it so you can invest in other areas of your life that are really, you know, a priority.
Absolutely. And obviously we've been talking about self-love for quite a while. And, you know, obviously I know you want to talk about the book.
Sure, why not?
No, of course.
We would love to talk about it.
We
want to
talk about the book. So, sure. I mean, for the viewers, tell us the title.
Yeah, okay. So it's called 52 Weeks to Self-Love, a year-long journey of inspirational and empowering reflections for women.
Absolutely. And
so give us, I guess, a little bit of context on the book, because self-love is a topic, we'll break it down a little bit, but it's a topic that you're very passionate about and that we spoke about and we made sure we wanted to cover before we sat down. So can you share with us a little bit about the book?
Yeah, sure. So I didn't intend to write this book, actually. I started writing these reflections during the pandemic. So I started writing them 1 week at a time. I would do one per week, and really to just try to help inspire and uplift women and men. So I have an email list, and I wanted during this very difficult and dark time to try to like bring some joy and uplifting and reduce some of the fear and the anxiety. So I started writing these reflections. And then I wound up getting just a lot of positive feedback from them. You know, people were emailing me how much they enjoyed them and how helpful they were. And so after doing about 80 of them, I wound up, I thought, well, why not put them into a book format? So I did 52 weeks so we could have them in one place, right? It's easier to read them and review them. And they really cover so much of the work that I've done with women over the past 20 years on all different types of topics. So one of the topics, of course, is learning to why boundaries are important and how to set them. That's covered in the book. You know, living more courageously. So how do we kind of overcome fear that comes up in our lives, which we all have, right? How do we kind of overcome that? Another one that women struggle with a lot is perfectionism. So how do we, you know, embrace more being imperfect and, and accepting ourselves and letting go of that perfectionism? You know, there's taught, and one another one is mindset, right? How do we keep a more positive, uplifting mindset? So really become like our own cheerleader, you know, and really, you know, our own best friend, rather than having this kind of constant negative critical self-talk, right? Which just brings us down and affects our confidence. So that's another area. So the book really kind of embraces a lot of different topics, but ultimately, you know, as you read it and work through it, because there's some exercises after each chapter, it really helps you develop greater confidence in yourself, greater self-acceptance and self-love, really. And one of the, I actually started a book club based on the book to kind of go through it together with a group of women. And but I'm opening that. So if there's other women in the audience, they could reach out and contact me to join it. But one of the things that came up was that many women feel like self-love and self-care is selfish.
Mm. Absolutely.
And I, you know, that what it even surprised me though, because I knew that women felt like self-care was selfish. But I was really surprised to hear that even like acts of self-love, they thought was selfish.
You know? So how would you really define self-care? Because I feel like for a lot of people, it can have many different definitions. A lot of people, I assume, would imagine like you're at home under a blanket with like a bunch of snacks watching Netflix. And for other people, it might be like you're going to the gym, or other people, it might be you're going on a hike. What really makes self-care, and what should the goal be when you try to indulge in self-care?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I just try to keep it very simple. I think it's like any act that you do for yourself that feels nourishing and honoring in some way. Mm. So if you eat like a bag of, you know, 5 bags of Doritos, right? I mean, it may feel nourishing initially, but eventually it kind of tips. It's not so honoring, right, of yourself. And so that's not really self-care, right? But if you, you know, so it can be very broad, right? Yeah. So I like to, you know, my first book, it was the second half of the book was on all the different types of self-care. So it's very broad. So even like setting boundaries, right? That's an aspect of self-care, right? Taking care of your financial health, that's self-care. That can be considered self-care, right? So that you don't get yourself into so much debt, or, you know, you're not... you know, you're not working, if you try anyway not to work paycheck to paycheck, right? So you're not constantly struggling. Self-care is, you know, it can be, yes, taking breaks, like you said, mental health breaks. So you know, if you're really working 60-hour weeks, you know, ongoing, you ask to take a mental health day, or you take a self-care day, right? Or you go away for a weekend and try to like renew yourself, right? So it can be encompassed so much, and that's what I love about that. There's no one way to do it right, right? It's just tuning in to kind of check in with yourself. What feels nourishing? What feels uplifting? What kind of feels that gives you peace, that helps renew you?
And going along with that, are there any forms of self-care, or, you know, any aspects of self-love that are imperative for women to have?
Well, I think the number one is really, you know, is embracing their relationship with themselves, you know, like really learning to develop a loving, kind, respectful relationship with themselves. So that means talking nicely and kindly to themselves, you know, not being judgmental and critical of themselves, right? Letting go of that negative self-talk and you know, being more positive towards themselves, embracing their flaws and imperfections, right? Instead of being judgmental, accepting and even celebrating their uniqueness, what makes them unique and what are their strengths. So really becoming their own best friend, you know, and really, you know, just trying to develop a strong connection with themselves, listening, like, what are my needs? What are my dreams, right? What makes me happy? And really allowing themselves to prioritize that, you know, especially their happiness. Because, you know, women especially, we're taught and conditioned to give almost all of ourselves, right, to everybody else. And then leave, like, the crumbs, you know, whatever's left for ourselves. And it happens so often. And that's why women, we get so depleted and we get burnt out and we're just completely, you know, we're just overwhelmed and they feel unhappy then, right? Because there's nothing left, like in their cup is not overflowing anymore, right? They're just so depleted. So we really try to, like, help women kind of give from the cup that's overflowing. So, right, if you practice good self-care and self-love, you're going to have a cup that's full. That and then when it's overflowing, because you continually practice that, then you can give to others from that. And then it's really like a very positive, loving gesture, right?
Absolutely.
It's not taking away from them because they're not exhausted doing it, right?
Absolutely. No, thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to share about the book?
Well, sure. If they could either, if you'd like a copy, you could either, you know, either directly on my website or mm-hmm. you can buy it on Amazon. But I can share my website if
they like.
Yeah. So it's www.danagionta.com.
Perfect. Or Amazon.com. Just search 52 Weeks of Self-Love.
Right.
Yeah. We should do a book club for it too.
We need to actually buy the book and put it on the bookshelf that we have.
Yeah.
Finally start book on it for once.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I see that. Bookshelf. We could use a book over there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Nice. We got vinyl albums. Yeah.
Got everything. Yeah. A book.
We're going to buy the book later tonight. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, and you know, if you have any, I don't know if you do any giveaways to your
audience.
Yeah,
we'd love to.
But I mean, I could give you guys another book, and you could do a giveaway to your
we'd love to do that
female audience. You know,
yeah, we'd love to do that.
Happy to do that.
Sure.
Yeah,
yeah, we'll make it happen. Stay up to date. Just keep an eye out on social media, and we'll announce the details soon. But besides that, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share with our audience? Anything we didn't cover or ask about?
You know, I would say, one of the things that it took me a long time to realize and just to give myself permission for is to really, which I'd encourage all the women and even the men and men too, is to prioritize your own happiness. You know, like really explore and try to identify what it is that makes you happy. And if, you know, and listen, and it's in there. It's in your heart. It's in your spirit. And if you keep tuning in, you'll get clear and then make it a priority. Really honor it because it just transforms your life when you do, you know? And so often we're trying to make everybody else happy, you know, and our partners or friends or, you know, our family members. And it's unfortunate then we're, you know, then they may be happier and we become unhappier, you know, and it becomes very imbalanced. And we're not meant to live like that. We're meant to live, I think, in doing things that light us up. And then we can bring our best selves to everything, right? To our relationships, to our home life, to our work, and live more courageously, you know, take risks, you know, have fun, do things that challenge you, keep growing. You know, sometimes we're so conditioned in this country to kind of, you know, play it safe and we get stuck in routines and, you know, a fear, right? A lot of fear. Don't take risks. All these terrible things can happen. But, you know, when you take risks and you live courageously and you, you know, go on detours, you know, some of the most adventurous, amazing experiences I've ever had in my life were from the detours when life didn't go the way it was planned, right? And there's no such thing as a linear life. There's no linear path to anything, right? It's an illusion. And we're kind of taught that this is the way life is. It's not, right? If you ask most people, just a few people may, but it's not. And some of the most amazing experience we have is when we go off this path, right? And we have these adventures. So that's what I'd say.
Awesome. Yeah. Beautiful words. Thank you so much. thank you so much for that message, and thank you so much for joining us and helping us cover a lot of these topics. And I hope we were able to bring a lot of value to our audience.
Yeah, no, and thank you for having me. And I love this topic for the women and for the men in your audience. You know, it's great. And thanks for being so open and vulnerable too, so we all can share and benefit everybody.
I'm gonna look back at this episode like, wow, no, you said a lot.
But for the people that would like to get in contact with you for either coaching or to hire you or maybe look for your book, how can they find you?
Yeah, so either my website, which, shall we say it again? So www.danagionta.com. I almost forgot how to spell my name. And or you can call 702-444-0601. Probably the best way.
Perfect. Yeah. There you go.
So yeah, and yeah, happy if you're interested in some coaching or therapy. Yeah, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to help and be there.
Absolutely. Guys, I don't know where they can find you guys on social media.
On Instagram, Ocho Benji.
@N2DATK on all social media platforms.
Go ahead and follow me. My personal Instagram is going to be @AKABTG. Follow the podcast page on the run.pod. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we're going to be putting out the details on how you could win your very own copy of 52 Weeks of Self-Love. Guys, thank you guys so much for supporting. If you like this episode, go ahead and give it a thumbs up. Drop a comment down below. Follow us on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all that good stuff. Thank you guys so much for listening and supporting as always. And we'll be back next week for another episode. Peace.